I think it's clear. We are not reading line and passage by passage. The idea is to have a gist to prime ourselves to the fundamental essence. It's more like, okay, this is it, and here this is the essence. Then when we read, it becomes easier to get into. Because, not because we cannot go through that, but it'll be then, God knows how many decades. So here the idea is just to prime so that we can, it becomes, it facilitates the whole reading, that this is the essence of the whole chapter. So we come to the end of this chapter on book 2, canto, book 2, chapter 1, indeterminates, cosmic determinations and the indeterminable. So we see something very interesting about Sri Aurobindo, that he has an answer for everything actually. And an answer where he doesn't, where you see different sides are simultaneously true. If you look at it, it's very amazing. Sri Aurobindo is not denying the law of karma, as we were saying, but he is equally saying that ultimately it is the divine who is doing all things. And one wonders that how the two can be true. And we'll come to all these mysteries. So supermind is a grand reconciliation of all the seeming opposites. And the biggest opposite that we see is the world and God. A world emerging out of darkness of inconscience. And on the other side is superconscient, who is supposed to create this. So how did inconscient come into existence at all? And when you see Sri Aurobindo's answer, it is so simple and direct that one wonders, how come we never thought about it? So the answer is very simple. The inconscient is the superconscient's self-hidden room. So he has hidden himself. So it's so amazing. And why he could see all this? Precisely because supermind allows that kind of complete experience. It's the complete realization where nothing is missed out. Nothing is left to chance and circumstance. So my temptation, let me start with my temptation. For example, in Savitri, Sri Aurobindo reveals that, well, to man's righteousness, this is his cosmic crime. Who is his? The Lord, transcendent. See the sense of humor. To man's righteousness, why are you not doing things the way I want them or I would want them? I want to build a world according to, means I'll give the design, Lord, you have to build the world according to my convenience, my comfort. So sense of righteousness, where we see evil, it must be punished. If you ask God, you say, I am, my task, job description is to transform. Because this is also myself. Why do you want to punish? If punishment will help, maybe I'll let him go through that also. But see, the human consciousness limitation. To man's righteousness, this is his cosmic crime. Almighty beyond good and evil to dwell. He dwells beyond good and evil. Leaving the good to their fate in a wicked world and evil to reign in this enormous scene. Of all the countries in the world, at least India is trying to stand up with what is true and right. So, that's how, you know, we all think. And all this hypocrisy and all lies, how come these people are making gold and money? We cannot understand. To understand, we have to have the supramental vision. Not going into that. All opposition seems and strife and chance, an aimless labor with but scanty sense, to eyes that see a part and miss the whole. The surface men scan, the depths refuse their search. A hybrid mystery challenges the view. Hybrid is like, this is also there, that is also there. But what is the reconciling truth? We don't know. Or a discouraging, sordid miracle. If you look at the world, it's no, nothing short of a miracle. But it seems so vain. What a waste. Why has he scattered all these billions of stars drifting in space? And among all these creatures, set us on the stage. who cannot understand a thing about anything. Now you see the lines. This only the supramental vision could write. Yet in the exact inconscient's stark conceit, in the casual error of the world's ignorance, a plan, a hidden intelligence is glimpsed. It's so relieving, no? Finally somebody is ready to take the burden. That's what is the story when Baroda Maharaja sees a lady whose bundle of sticks has fallen down. She is lifting it. So Baroda Maharaja goes there and ties the bundle and puts it on her head and looks back to Sri Aurobindo and that he will praise me. After all, being a Maharaja, I have done this. So he goes there. Sri Aurobindo smiles and says, that is what we have been doing till now. Passing the burden back. But for a Raja, he should make sure that the lady doesn't have to lift the burden. That is a solution. To keep saying your karma. Okay, if my karma, at least there should be a bulb flashing and you should see a line like on computer. This was the karma you did 5 lives back. Okay, at least one would say, okay, fine. Though it will be justice delayed, is justice denied. But dil ke behlane ko ghalib ye khayal achha hai. Because how to explain? But there is a reason. Let's look at it. There is a purpose in each stumble and fall. Who can say this? Nature's most careless lolling is a pause. Pose, not pause, pose. Say, I don't know, I feel I have no aim, no direction, where are things going? Don't worry, this too is part of the journey. Chain has been pulled, train is on the way, stopped on the way. So nature's most careless lolling is a pose, preparing some forward step, some deep result. Ingenious notes plugged into a motived score. So, you know, you have the music composed and suddenly there will be a, which is not part of the score, the, not part of the musical thing, and a note comes. Mother's music is so commonly. Ingenious note. Where did it come from? That's how it comes from. These million discords dot the harmonious theme of the evolution's huge orchestral dance. Like in dance, you know, different people, if supposing a mega dance show, then everybody is, okay, your steps are these many steps. Somebody else, you have to do these steps. Somebody else, these steps. And then if they meet together and they try out, there will be chaos. But ultimately when they come together and dance together, then there is the harmony. A truth supreme has forced the world to be. It has wrapped itself in matter as in a shroud. A shroud of death, a shroud of ignorance. So there is a purpose. And then it makes life so wonderful, because that's what we are ultimately looking for. And to say purpose is that you must get liberated sounds so ridiculous, you know, sometimes very cruel, that somebody pushed us into it. I don't even have the right to know who pushed me in to start with. And at the end I am told, you know, you have to just come out somehow. And okay, that would be worthwhile if life was beautiful all through. There is so much. There is all kinds of things in creation. And after that you say, okay, quit. Why did you send me if I had to come back the same? So it's actually, if you look at it, it's, I don't know how the divine would be reacting to our ignorance. It's not a very good thing to tell him that, you know, you drew a very horrible painting and then you pushed me inside somehow and now you are saying come out, but actually you are the one who had sketched it. So this is how, but we look at, so here we come back to the life divine, page 3, 33. All aspects of the omnipresent reality have their fundamental truths in the supreme existence. Thus, even the aspect or power of inconscience, which seems to be an opposite, a negation of the eternal reality, yet corresponds to a truth held in itself by the self-aware and all-conscious infinite. So that's why the asura who is on the opposite pole, what does he say? He imitates the same reality. He says, I am God. Same reality which he denies, he imitates. I am the most powerful. Same reality. He says, you will come with me. You will have all the pleasures and joys of the world. It's just the shadow. And that's how it trapped, because man is seeking for these things, but he doesn't know that this is the other side of the pole. It is when we look closely at it, the infinite power of plunging the consciousness into a trance of self-involution, a self-oblivion of the spirit veiled in its own abysses, where nothing is manifest but all inconceivably is, and can emerge from that ineffable latency. In the heights of spirit, this state of cosmic or infinite trance sleep appears to our cognition as a luminous, uttermost superconscience. At the other end of being, it offers itself to cognition as the spirit's potency of presenting to itself the opposites of its own truths of being, an abyss of non-existence, a profound night of inconscience, a fathomless swoon of insensibility, from which yet all forms of being, consciousness and delight of existence can manifest themselves. So that truth has hidden itself in a shroud. That's so simple, and it's emerging itself step by step on the basis of matter. This is the main difference. There it is self-existent. Here it is now in multiplicity. In diversity it is appearing. So whenever things appear in diversity, there is a problem initially, because each will has to run its own course in the drama, develop to a point, and till that point there will be discord, part of the play. And then when it develops to a point, then it becomes ready for the harmonious understanding that all this has its role, all this has its place. Even the so-called oppositions are part of the plan. But till one time, till a particular point of time, a person who wants to develop one side has to discard the other. So he doesn't understand the other things. And therefore, there is a discord. We can take anything. Like, you know, somebody who is studying medicine will not understand what it means to labor to, you know, cook a meal. He doesn't understand what it means to bring up a child. He thinks, oh, this is nothing. And there is a discord. But then, as he grows, then he discovers, oh my God, this is far more difficult. So this is how initially, and it has its own beautiful place. If my mom didn't feed me, all this study, medicine, all this later. This is laid the base, annam brahmeti. So this is where we have forgotten. We mind sections things. But the supramental vision is integral. So that's why it is called as integrality. In the heights of spirit, this state of cosmic or infinite trance sleep, we have just read it. Okay. So what does it see? After a fathomless swoon of insensibility, but they appear in limited terms in slowly emerging and increasing self-formulations, even in contrary terms of themselves. It is the play of a secret all-being, all delight, all knowledge, but it observes the rules of its own self-oblivion, self-opposition, self-limitation until it is ready to surpass it. It is not a denial. It is one term, one formula of the infinite and eternal existence. So we have this baby Krishna who is in the womb. Now you see, nobody knows except Vasudev and Kans that this baby in the womb, who is just helplessly lying in the womb, is actually God. See, that story is so symbolic. Otherwise, they see as a little child, even Yashoda Ma, he has to go through that process. Very nice songs on that, that, you know, that why is he? He is Brahma, Anadi, Ananta, Agochar, Neti, Neti, Jako, Shruti, Gave. So Nandalal, Aaj Janani ki, Anguri Pagad ke Chalivna Sikhave. Ki, what is this? He can't understand the play. That he is God, we know it. He is Brahma, Anadi, Ananta, Agochar. Why has to hold the hand of Yashoda Maya and go do those mischief and then, you know, Chaurasya Chauram, you know, all this story. Why he has to play? That's the process of the whole thing. He is not skipping. So both are same truth. On one side, to one vision, he is a helpless little child like any other child. A bit more naughty. So naughty children are, used to say, tell them, Nanna Krishna. But on the other side, if you see, he is the same reality who will one day on battlefield of Kurukshetra declare himself as Purushottama. They are not two, they are one reality. So this is the vision towards which Sri Aurobindo is taking us. And there's so many examples we can take, but this is one of them. So this is not a denial of that. It is an unfolding of that. And he must observe the rules of the game, because those rules also have a meaning. They are a preparation. If he goes, that's why obedience to the divine is necessary to arrive at freedom. There are people who say, why should I obey? I have come here for freedom. Mother has said you have freedom. So, okay. Yes, there is freedom. But you have to, that freedom means you have to observe the rules of the game freely. There is no compulsion. Nobody is telling you, you have to do this. Otherwise, you know, you will be punished. No, nobody is there to tell you. And if you don't understand it, you are made to learn it. Because that's how the joy of unfolding. Otherwise, there is a superimposition. So even this misunderstood freedom is part of the plan. Obedience is part of the plan. The supreme freedom is part of the plan. They are one single plan through which he is taking us. So this is the somebody said this very beautifully, that, you know, why in Sri Aurobindo ashram there is so much freedom, that, you know, you keep fire and ghee together sometimes, you know, everybody goes together in playground, anywhere you see. So one person gave a very good reply. Everywhere we'll see, you know, the different queues, men, women, segregation, sitting also. Some places, in some cults, there women have to sit behind. I don't know if somebody identifies, but I'm not going to mention. They have a huge following and a lot of money. Huh? The originating saint is a great person, without a doubt about it. But I'm just saying what happens subsequently. And in front, there are only men. So once I had to share the platform with one of their Gurujis. And the usual fanfare, Guruji, Brahmaleen, all this starts, you know, drama. So I was, by the time I had to speak, I was feeling, what is this? Why are women accepting it? That rebel. 30 years back maybe. So I said, what kind of Brahman is this that is cutting off half of itself and pushing it into the darkness? So it was very symbolic. And they took it as a symbol. They didn't realize that I am simultaneously passing a comment. Half the Brahman. You discard Maya, Prakriti. But actually it was also a little punch, neatly packed. So this is how, you know, we do that. We cut that reality into bits and parts. But it's one reality. That's what Sri Aurobindo is trying to reveal to us. So next page, 334. If all that we experience were an imposition, an unreal creation of the absolute, that means if it is Maya which has somehow got into existence, both cosmic and individual existence. Okay, before that, the man said something very interesting. We were at that. So what reply he gave? A yogi, not here, but elsewhere. He gave a very interesting reply. He says, you know, Sri Aurobindo can do it because he is Bhagavan. Somehow intuitively he got it. He didn't know super mind and all. Bhagavan can do this. He can put contraries together. Vasuki and Mushaka can be together. No issues. So that is the state where the contraries can be brought together and even harmonized. That is the great plan. So he says, if all that we experience were an imposition of an unreal creation in the absolute, both cosmic and individual existence would be in their very nature an ignorance. The sole real knowledge would be the indeterminable self-awareness of the absolute. This is what we keep hearing from the great ones. If all were the creation of a temporal and phenomenal creation, this is used, vyavarik, that's how it is explained. That no, while you are in the world, you have to have the vyavarik knowledge and you have to act accordingly, misquoting the Prashna Upanishad that there is a higher knowledge and a lower knowledge. So lower knowledge means when your eyes are bad, you go to an ophthalmologist and ask for a glasses. But if the eye of ignorance, the original cataract, you practice yoga. So there are two layers or levels. So one is temporal and practical, the other is, this also an explanation. So Sri Aurobindo says, if all were the creation of a temporal and phenomenal creation over against the reality of the witnessing timeless eternal, and if the creation were not a manifestation of the reality, but an arbitrary self-effective cosmic construction, that too would be the knowledge of a temporary structure of evanescent consciousness and being, a dubious becoming that passes across the vision of the eternal, not a knowledge of reality. Then also it has no meaning, you know, that, you know, there is a construction, very beautiful construction, but it has no meaning. Temporarily you have to pass through it, but the real thing is the one who is watching. But if all is a manifestation of the reality, now this is where Sri Aurobindo brings that the world is neither Maya, illusion, nor just a play, Lila comes close, but a manifestation, a pragatan of the hidden reality, which is the most logical thing. Because what is hidden inside, that is manifesting itself. It's very simple and logical. But if all is a manifestation of the reality and itself real by the constituting immanence, so it's not only a manifestation of the reality from above, but that reality is hidden in each atom of existence, immanent. The substantiating essence and presence of the reality, then the awareness of individual being and world being would be in its spiritual origin and nature a play of the infinite self-knowledge and all knowledge. Ignorance could be only a subordinate movement, a suppressed or restricted cognition, or a partial and imperfect evolving knowledge, with the true and total self-awareness and all awareness concealed both in it and behind it. So this is the complete explanation, and he will elaborate on it several chapters which are going to come. But essentially there is a meaning in the world play, because the one origin is hidden inside it, he is immanent in it, and it's emerged out of that, it's not imposed upon him. So imposed is Maya making things and giving. And the witness is watching the rasgulla but not eating it because he is all delight. But we trapped here are only busy from rasgulla to rajbhog. But if he becomes the rasgulla, then what happens? Then we eat it and we enjoy it. But after some time we discover, it's not, where is the taste gone? So we eat another rasgulla. Then after some time we stop enjoying the rasgulla. Then we want the rajbhog. And then finally the doctor declares you have diabetes. Then finally we discover the sweetness of the divine. See, he is preparing us. So ignorance becomes a subordinate movement. Because he's madhuram, madhuram. So all madhuram is coming from there. Okay, so all diabetics, blame it on Krishna. Madhuram, madhuram. He is so madhur. So the, but in ignorance, madhuram for us means madhurbhog. That's sweet. But when we have the knowledge, we discover it's all basically there. They don't cancel each other. He also, all our gods have for prasad something sweet. Aris, start doing some samosa prasad if you want to, you know. All of them, then there will be problem of cholesterol. All the gods eat sweet. And naturally, India is capital of diabetes, somebody says. What can we do? Our gods have set trendsetters. Every meal must end with a sweet. Home you must give sweet. So anyway, so it's part of the play. Don't take these things very seriously. Okay. Then Shobhinda takes the last objection. It might be objected that the supramental cognition is, after all, not the final truth of things. That's how some, oh, this is the fourth stage. There is Satchidananda, Satlok, Tapoghanlok, Anandalok. Then this is Maharlok, supramental. Okay, it's a link. But in that ultimate existence, there is no creation. This is the logic. Shobhinda is taking that logic, not realizing it is supermind, which is the consciousness of the Lord. He only creates the Satlok, Tapolok and Chitganlok. Supramental differentiates everywhere and keeps the unity intact. That's what its beauty is. So he says, beyond the supramental plane of consciousness, which is an intermediate step from overmind and mind to the complete experience of Satchidananda, are the greatest heights of the manifested spirit. Here surely existence would not at all be based on the determination of the one in multiplicity. It would manifest solely and simply a pure identity in oneness. This is the objection that people may raise. But the supramental truth consciousness would not be absent from these planes. Why? For it is an inherent power of Satchidanand. It is truth consciousness. It is the omniscience and omnipotence of the divine. So if there is no supermind, that means Satchidanand is only powerless and without knowledge, is just an inert. So that's what he is saying. The difference would be that the determination would not be demarcations. They would be plastic, interfused, each a boundless finite. So only thing is there, supermind is active. It is going to differentiate its power, because that's how the Supreme knows himself in all things. But only it will not be a, that is the problem why creation on a finite basis had to be built. Because each is a boundless finite and so it fuses. So you can't have multiplicity actually there. You can't experience the joy. Imagine if you are going with a friend for a movie. This is an advertisement that comes like that. I think MS Dhoni and one of the person is some bank's advertising. Then as he says, he echoes the same thing. At the end, they are both saying the same thing. Oh, I'm forgetting whatever that is. That's not important. So you go to a movie and your friend... See how that scene is. Yes, very good, very good, very good, very good, very, very horrible, very horrible. After some time, you say, not getting this fellow. You should add, do something, something different, something new. It'll be monotone. That's why, see, when people, not too much fight, but little bit difference of opinion, that too is a joy. It adds to the charm, it adds to the complexity, it adds to the diversity. What kind of a house there will be where both are saying yes to each other? It will become very boring after some time. Sameness. Divine knows all this. That's why he created Purusha and Prakriti. You see, diversity. So this is where he says that supermind is there, but they are the formation. Supermind different. It's its work. That's how the Supreme knows the possibilities within itself. Because supermind is operating. So it's revealing all the possibilities. But they are demarcation. They are not, they are differentiation. They are not demarcations. They are merging into each other. They are plastic. So that's why they cannot manifest. So he cannot manifest them. It's all merged together like a single mass. So, like you make those clay images of, you know, different characters and then you suddenly mix them all together. Then you say, oh, you know, this fellow was that and this fellow was that. It's like that. So that's why he's saying, for there all is in each and each is in all radically and integrally. There would be to the utmost a fundamental awareness of identity, a mutual inclusion and interpenetration of consciousness. Knowledge as we envisage it would not exist because it would not be needed, since all would be direct action of consciousness in being itself, identical, intimate, intrinsically self-aware and all-aware. So all these experiences Shobhinda has had. Here he is putting it as it would be because he is, you know, positing it as a logical argument. But if you really look at it, it's a pure experience that he's talking about. And so the last sentence, it might be said again that even so, in Sachidananda itself at least, not in Satlok, Tapolok, Anandlok, okay, but in Sachidananda at least, there could be nothing but the self-awareness of pure existence and consciousness and a pure delight of existence. Or indeed, this triune being itself might well be only a trinity of original spiritual self-determinations of the infinite. These two, like all determinations, would cease to exist in the ineffable absolute. But our position is that these must be inherent truths of the Supreme Being. Their utmost reality must be pre-existent in the absolute, even if they are ineffably other than what they are in the spiritual mind's highest possible experience. And then comes that punchline, the absolute is not a mystery of infinite blankness, nor a supreme sum of negations. Nothing can manifest that is not justified by some self-power of the original and omnipresent reality. So this is where hardly anybody would even reach this point, but still there are some people who may, for the sake of argument, this is, you're going back to the same, like circular argument. Then the whole thing becomes inexplicable and falls flat. So he says nothing would be which is not already inherent in the absolute. It may not be evident, and we can understand this very simply, that when a child is growing up, he is studying all kinds of things. Then a time comes when he, and as a baby he is helpless. If you look at it, he has no kind of identity or goal. But suddenly he develops an interest in a certain direction. There is a determination. So now that possibility, some way or the other, was present in him. That's how different people, different children will take different courses. Because there is that possibility inherent, even in that state of apparent blankness. And nowadays in neuroscience we talk about it, that is the brain a tabula rasa? That there is it blank on which people are just writing through sanskar? No, it is not like that. There is something that we bring inherently inside us. So that's what he's saying, it would be there inherently inside the absolute, and supermind and all these are ways through which it is manifesting. He'll take up all of these points subsequently, and we'll just enter into the chapter, not touch upon it. Chapter 2 is Brahman, Purusha, Ishwara, Maya, Prakriti, Shakti. So all these terms we have heard, so we can just... Brahman is the supreme reality, the ultimate reality. And it is not a reality which is... Brahman by its definition is everywhere in everything. Everything, this glass of water is also Brahman. Matter is Brahman. That's how the story goes. That, you know, I think it is Varuni and Bhrigu, where he asks, what is Brahman? And he says, meditate and come back. He says, Annam Brahmeti. Matter is Brahman. He says, all right. But think, meditate more. He comes back after 1 year, says, Pranam Brahmeti. So he says, all right, meditate more. He comes back and says that it is mind which is Brahman. He says, all right, meditate more. He comes, Vijnanam Brahmeti. So he says, all right, meditate more. Then he comes back and says, Raso Vesaha, delight. Verily it is delight. Now see, he doesn't cancel any of these. So Brahman is all that is Brahman. So it's the ultimate reality without a second. So there is no second in it. So that's how it is, the Brahman. And the word comes from the root Braha. And Braha is that which can illimitably expand. So it is all comprehensive reality. You can't set a limit that here Brahman is not. It is an Braha. It's illimitable expansion. That's what Brahman is. Purusha. Purusha is the one who is watching over Prakriti. So what is Purusha? It is, now here he will find the reconciling truth. But Purusha comes from Pura. Pura is the place or dwelling place. Shah, Shayanam or whatever, he is the stable indwelling person. What is he doing? Nothing. He is like the typical husband, sitting, watching television. So he is watching the cosmos. Prakriti is presenting to him food, tea, everything. Purusha is enjoying it or rejecting it. But because he is bringing the money, so he is activating Prakriti. Is the crudest example, sorry. But basically, Purusha is the one who is the dwelling inside. That's all it means. Pura, he is the one who is. So this is the other term which is used, that the divine is Purusha, all this is Prakriti. He is Brahman and all this is Maya. So we'll come to this Maya later. Or Ishvara. So Ishvara is Lord. He is not just the Lord but the enjoyer. So Ish comes from the root Ish. Ish is the Lord. So Ishvara is the Lord who has the Aishwarya. He is the enjoyer of everything. So corresponding to them, we have these three terms which are known in Indian thought. Maya. So Maya comes from the root Dhatu Ma. Ma is to measure out. So that's how we have Mata. Mata measures out. Means thereby the womb through which she brings out different children. And Matra. Matra is the clear cut. Matra is the dose. Earlier we used to have Matra. Also some people say Matra. How much Matra? So comes from the same root. So what Maya does, Brahman is everything. Maya measures out. She has to see, you are talking too much. Go and rest. So Brahman imposing on the Brahman. That's how it seems. Brahman is infinite, but Maya measures out the infinite into finite forms and shapes. So wherever there is anything finite, even gods, when they are acting in a way that they are one aspect of the reality, there is Maya. Because Maya puts a little veil, very subtle veil. But there is a point where they are like all three are one. That conception is there. So there is Maya. Maya is what? She is the one who lays down this, formulates the one infinite. Then there is Prakriti. So Pra is the beginning and Kriti, to act, to make. So Prakriti is all the dynamic movement in creation. So you see how Purusha and Prakriti have no relation. Purusha is just watching. He is the indwelling. But all action is done by Prakriti. So Prakriti is the one who is doing everything. That's how it is understood. And then there is the Ishvara. He is the Lord. But what is the Lord without power? There have been some. But... But the Lord, his power is Shakti. Shakti comes from the root Shak, that one can, it's capable of doing anything. So we have these three ways or aspects of the one reality. There are three different lines of experience that one can have. And Sri Aurobindo now takes up to reconcile these in a supramental cognition. In a supramental cognition, they are not three, but they are one. So the quarrel ceases. Similarly, Brahm and Maya are not separate from each other. They are intertwined into each other. There is no imposition. Similarly, Purusha and Prakriti, he will do the same thing, and Ishvara and Shakti, and shows the subtle differences and the points of unity and union. So we'll take it up. We'll enter into this chapter properly tomorrow. So.